Hello and welcome to the Majlis, the weekly podcast by Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, focusing on Central Asia. I'm Mohammed Tahir, your host here in Washington, D.C. After 30 years in power on March 19, Kazakhstan's leader Nursultan Nazarbayev has stepped down as the president. This was a big news, perhaps long time in the making. The announcement followed by the appointment of Senate Speaker Kasym-Jomart Tokayev as an interim president and Nazarbayev's daughter Dariga Nazarbayeva as the Speaker of the Senate. And there might be things yet in the pipelines. Now the question is, what has just happened? What is happening since then? And what does this mean for Nazarbayev, for Kazakhstan, and for the region at large going forward? To discuss all these, I'm joined by Dr. Lukan Cheschi, lecturer of Central Asian Studies at the University of Glasgow. Joanna Lilis, Eurasia Net is chief Central Asia correspondent based in Kazakhstan. Torokul Durov, director of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Kazakh service in Prague, along Bruce Panier, editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Central Asia blog, Kishlok Owazi. Welcome aboard, colleagues.
Thank you.
Very nice to have you. So, it's almost unbelievable that the day has come that Kazakhstanis woke up to a day when Nazarbayev the first and the only president the country has seen is no more in the office as the president. So, Joanna, let's start with you. How things looks like out there without him being in the office as the president?
Well, so far, Mohammed, things look pretty much the same. Certainly, on the streets, people are pretty calm. But I have to say, they're still reeling a bit with shock. I went out and talked to about the resignation. Really, their first reaction is that they can hardly believe it. Now, they all also say, just as do Central Asia watchers, you know, we've known it's coming to some degree. Yeah. We've seen signs of preparation, and we know that Nazarbayev, he's aging, he's 78, but still people feel shocked. And, young people in this country, they've never lived under another leader. He's been in power for 30 years. Yeah. So I think there's a real sense of shock in the country. Shock, surprise. Some people confess themselves to being upset. Some people, of course, are pleased. They think it's time he went. They think it's time for democratic change. Now, whether they'll get that, I guess we'll get on to that.
Definitely. Let me also get Torokul your point in that you have correspondents throughout the country. So what kind of news were you getting from there immediately after the decision was announced?
I absolutely agree with Joanna. The first feeling and impression, it was like everybody was shocked. Shock and euphoria, let's say. Hmm. But the next day, probably there was more disappointment. There were so many memes and posts in Facebook and social media saying that now we know who is still in power. Now we know who is still the man in the family. Yeah. So this was kind of a feeling of disappointment with renaming the capital of Kazakhstan into after Nursultan Nazarbayev's name. And not only one city, main capital, but all main streets of all regions. And today, what we are hearing from different analysts, experts, they're saying that there was even, the change of constitution, which was not so right, actually. Because in the constitution, in 48th article, it said the person who has assumed the authority of the president shall not have the right to initiate changes and additions to the constitution. But there was no anything like any referendum. It was just initiated by the interim president. And after that, parliament immediately approved. But now we are still waiting for the signature of Kasym-Jomart Tokayev. But overall, this situation created, I think, a big disappointment next day.
Yeah, Bruce, Dr. Luka, I want to take your thoughts, first impressions about when you heard Nazarbayev's decision, because you were writing about this, you were expecting this to come sooner rather than later. But before that, Torokul, you mentioned about the name changes there. Joanna, some people are protesting against the renaming the capital after Nursultan, and there have been some detentions, arrests taking place.
That's right, Mohammed, yeah. There was a small protest in Astana today. I say Astana now, of course, the city is now called Nur-Sultan. A group of people went out to protest against that name change, arguing that it wasn't democratically decided, and most of them were arrested. I think we're hearing that around 20 people were arrested. But what I'm hearing as well in Almaty is that some people are planning to go out and protest tomorrow. It's a major public holiday here in Kazakhstan for Navruz, the spring equinox. And people, there are a few people I'm seeing chatter on social media that they are planning some protests tomorrow. Now, I think if that happens, we can expect more arrests. And we also heard of a few arrests in Uralsk, the city in northwestern Kazakhstan.
That is an interesting development. Bruce, is there any potential that it will grow?
I'm sure that there probably will be some more protests. I would find it hard to believe that they would let this get out of hand in any way, or even go very far, you know, because we saw the protests a couple of years ago over the land, you know, the land privatization scheme. And then we just saw the ones with the mothers that were complaining that, you know, they didn't have the privileges that many children had to keep jobs down and stuff. Obviously, this was all planned out in advance. And I'm sure part of that plan is to lock down any signs of protest as quickly as possible, because they don't want any kind of unrest coming in the lead up to the elections next year and as the transfer of power takes hold.
Okay, Dr. Luka Bruce, just very quickly, your just first impressions when you heard about Nazarbayev stepping down?
Well, for me, it was like the signs were all there, but we just didn't want to see them, really. Bruce and I had been writing about this, and it turned out that we outlined the transition environment quite accurately. But the time it took them to get to this point has been very slow. So, of course, there is a shock. I mean, I'm not young anymore, but I still can't remember Kazakhstan without Nazarbayev. So, I mean, I think that it's important that we've seen a Central Asian leaders leaving power while alive. And also, it's important that we see a Central Asian leader leaving power of his own. These are two historical moments, and we need to give credit to Nazarbayev. He did something unprecedented in the very sense of the word.
You know, if I can add something here about the overall impression and feeling of ordinary people. We have been talking to people on the street, on Almaty, Astana in the last several days, and what we heard a lot from ordinary people, several of them, they were telling that they're kind of afraid now. What will happen next? Yeah. Because as Jonas said, in like 30 years, their young generations, they haven't seen anyone in power, like apart from Nazarbayev, except Nazarbayev. That is why they have this kind of feeling of fear for their future. And not only young people, but, you know, many people were telling the same thing. And yesterday, some even members of parliament, they were crying into our, like when we were they were speaking to our cameras.
Okay, so this is kind of a Bruce reaction by the people. So if you look into this from Nazarbayev's own perspective, what might be going on in his mind when deciding about this?
You referred to the paper that Luka and I wrote a while ago, and I think that really was the trigger for him when Islam Karimov died, and they were about the, you know, roughly the same age. Karimov was a little bit older, but Nazarbayev has reached 78, which was exactly the age Karimov was when he died. And both of them were appointed actually 24 hours apart to head their respective Soviet republics. So that would have been a sign for him that his time was coming close to an end. You know, I mean, I wasn't so surprised, obviously, that he did decide to retire. I think he wanted to go out at a time when Kazakhstan was more was stable, more or less. You know, certainly that I think that economic crisis set his plans back a little bit. But, you know, the fact is that he's 78 and he's going on 79. And the Uzbek example specifically, I think, kind of also gave him a little more insight into what could happen after he's gone. Because we've seen that while Karimov is still officially revered, you know, and they don't use his name and say anything bad, but certainly members of Karimov's family have suffered. And also the reforms that they're trying to implement, they make reference to the fact that they have to do this because mistakes were made in the past, you know, which obviously is alluding to the fact that this was made under Islam Karimov. He doesn't want that to happen to him. He's always been an image guy, you know, from the very early days. And I think he has been thinking about that all the time he has been in power. How will he be remembered? So he wants this to go smoothly. He wants to be alive to watch how the country is being managed and make sure that it's still headed in the kind of the direction that he set it off into to begin with, and that his image is and his legacy is going to be preserved. So, you know, I think that was a lot of the reason why he made the choice to step down. We know that he's still got all kinds of power.
Joanna, does the timing indicate anything? And why did he choose March 19 rather than a week, a month, or a year earlier or later?
Well, in the very, you know, sort of short-term perspective, I mean, we're in the middle now of a big public holiday for Nowruz, the spring equinox. So I can see that in a very savvy way, I think the administration decided if they did that 2 days before the holidays started or just the, you know, with one working day to go, they organized everything in order to get everything done and then have a period of quiet. So yesterday was a working day. The new president, Kasym Jomart Tokayev, inaugurated, and now a period of quiet for things to bed in. And in general, I mean, more importantly, perhaps, about the timing, you know, I think it's been very difficult. If we assume that Nazarbayev and his entourage have been looking for a good time for him to go, and I think it's probably safe to say they have, I mean, presumably for a long time, they have been putting these mechanisms in place for a long time, at least 2 years or more even. I mean, some of the changes that are meant to take effect now go back about 9 years. But why now? Well, I think, you know, Kazakhstan has been in some ways through a rough few years. Bruce mentioned economic crisis. Now, from 2014 to 2016, you know, the economy was slowing down and things were pretty rough for ordinary people. The mood in Kazakhstan has changed. We see that. Nazarbayev acknowledged this before his resignation, not even a month ago, firing the government, announcing a big spending package in acknowledgement of rising socioeconomic disaffection. Now, you might say in that case, it's not a good time to go. But what I would say is, when has been a good time to go in recent years? Things have been tough.
Turkul, I heard that he's going to stay in the presidential office in his new role. Correct?
Definitely, in terms of from the perspective of making political decisions, for example, not much has changed. Nazarbayev is chairman of the powerful Security Council, and he is also the leader of ruling party in Rotan.
Yeah.
And even like the president, if we tell about Kasym Jomart Tokayev now, interim president, is a member of Nuratan, yeah? And so there is, in making political main decisions of in the country, I think in all spheres, economy, security, foreign policy, Nazarbayev is still in power, and probably he will be in power until his death, as the laws gives him this chance. Yeah. Also, he has a status of Elbasy as a founder of the country.
Yeah, definitely. You know, we would like to talk about that aspect of his new role. I mean, he's still quite a decision maker, but not perhaps as accountable as a president might be about the outcome of any decision that he might take. Great. Now that the Nazarbayev is no more the president, what does this mean for Kazakhstan going forward? We will continue the discussion talking about this and many other questions very shortly. First, let me recap the debate that today on the Majlis podcast. I'm joined by Dr. Lokan Cheschi, lecturer of Central Asian Studies at the University of Glasgow, Joanna Lilis, Eurasia Net's chief Central Asia correspondent based in Almaty, Tora Kuldorov, director of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Kazakh service, Bruce Panier, editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Central Asia blog, Kishlak Owozi. I am Mohammed Tahir, RFL's media manager for South and Central Asia in Washington, D.C., and we are discussing latest leadership change in Kazakhstan. Let's get to it, Dr. Luka, with you. So Torakul just mentioned the fact that Nazarbayev is no more there as a president. What does it mean in terms of change or the prospect of change? Is it a new day in Kazakhstan?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, Bruce was saying before, Nazarbayev always seen right. And the image of the country now, there is someone else at the helm. And this is, you can't argue with that. There is a new president who has been chosen by the elite, and it's temporary, but it's still someone else. So I think that visually, there is different in the way in which power is personalized. So we know that now there is someone who's not Nazarbayev. Nazarbayev may retain some power. I am not sure how much he will get involved in the decision-making. This is yet to be seen. But there is someone else who's going to take the decision, going to be the face of the country. And don't forget, Tokayev is a polyglot. So he's someone who can present the image of Kazakhstan with relevance to different audiences across different continents, Europe, Russia, China. So it's not accidental that he got the job. So I think that we had to recognize that there is a significant instance of change in the way in which power is represented. Now, what we don't know yet is whether or not, in addition to leadership change, we will have policy change. If I may just elaborate one thing that you said before, Mohammed, I think that we're going to see now more, at least popular, in terms of the population, regime accountability. Because Nazarbayev was always ready to, you know, to pass the buck onto someone else. You know, a couple of weeks ago, he sacked the government saying they have not been able to do the job that it was supposed to do. I don't think that Tokayev got that kind of power yet. So we will see a president that is somehow more accountable, at least by the policy that they are going to be implementing. At least we see that in the next few months, this is a truly temporary leadership. There is someone else who's going to be emerging in the last few months.
Yeah, Tokayev is there for an interim period, right? Until the election, Joanna?
That's what the constitution says, That's what Nazarbayev said. Now, he said until the election. The election is due in December 2020. But, you know, I still wouldn't rule out that there might be an early election. There could be two reasons for that. I mean, the reason if Tokayev is the man, Nazarbayev and the other elites want in the job, then the reason for an early election would be to legitimize Tokayev as the leader in the eyes of the people and the world as well. But if Tokayev is a real interim leader, as in much more short term, then an early election might be held and a new person installed. So I definitely don't rule out an early election. Kazakhstan almost never holds elections on schedule.
Also, I think, Torukul, you had slightly a different perspective on what role Nazarbayev might be comfortable with taking going forward, in the fact that he's hanging there as a party chief, as the head of the Security Council, and he gets his daughter appointed to Senate Speaker's role. Bruce, what he has in mind for his own future?
Most of the constitutional changes that give him all the power he has without the title of president were made 15 to 18 years ago. He was looking way into the future for this kind of stuff. He did not want to be stepping down from office and be nobody after this happened. So there's, you know, if you look into this stuff, there's a number of things he can do. I think he has the right to call the president and consult with him anytime he wants. I know he has the right to do that, to convene parliament if he wants. You know, I mean, this just goes on and on. He can make an address on state television and just call state media and say, I'm going to make a statement and I want you all to cover it. There's a lot of things that come with that. So he's certainly not stepping aside entirely, you know, but again, we come back to the age factor here, you know, that he is 78. He's not a young guy. He can't, it's a strain to manage all this stuff all the time. So he'll be more focused on things that he thinks are key issues and important to him. But a lot of other stuff, he's probably just going to let other officials take care of, you know, and he won't have some less worries about what's happening. But it's not like he's been totally defanged or that he's going to walk off into the sunset at this point. He's not quite there.
Is it because of his ego that the reason why he wants to hold off, or he's scared of something, or what's it? I mean, what is his motivation?
As long as he retains some power, they can't change legislation right away, for instance. You know, I mean, one of the things, like, for instance, he's protected from investigation or prosecution or something. Now, we know he's accumulated a lot of money. No one's sure how much. You know, so the last thing that he wants in the world he'd want is to have no power and have someone come up, a new person whom maybe even he is the candidate that Nazarbayev preferred. And I only have to refer to what just happened in Kyrgyzstan to show you that just because you back a candidate and have faith in him doesn't mean that he's going to work out the way you wish after he's in power. You know, and if he got out and someone felt that maybe their best, the new president, new leader, thought that the best way to get some popular support would be to open investigations of Nazarbayev and his family, he'd get the constitution changed, you know, strip away a lot of this stuff that Nazarbayev had written in to protect him and keep some power in his hands. And it would be a total disaster for him and his family. He end up in the same boat as Gulnara Karimova or something. So,
Joanna, maybe you can jump in here. Whatever he has in mind, is it realistic to think that he can hold on there?
Just picking up on where you left off, I think, Mohammed, you hit the nail on the head when you said the word ego. You know, I think any leader who's held power for 30 years, I think, you know, they've got to have a big ego. And we know that Nazarbayev has a big ego, and he's been presented as a really special person for Kazakhstan, a person nobody can, an act that nobody can really follow. I mean, mean, that is the message we're getting. He's special. He has special constitutional privileges personally as the first president. So I think it's an ego thing. And I also think he just cannot let go of he's micromanaged so much of Kazakh political process over the years. He can't let go. He won't let go. He doesn't want to let go. And he also thinks that he's the best person, you know, to keep control of things. And I would say he's not going to step back. I think certainly in the early stages, we're going to see micromanagement probably, although whether we'll be able to see it as the public, but I think is another matter. But I think he will be really controlling, you know, policymaking. He still seems very sprightly. He may not appear as much as he did, but I think it'll be very clear that he is really making a lot of the decisions.
If I just jump in, Mohammed, I just want to say something. I mean, it's all very true, but I think that we're probably exaggerating too much the individual component of the whole thing. I mean, Tuesday's decision was the individual representation of a collective process. I mean, no one rules a country by himself for 30 years. Nazarbayev only had an elite that was supporting him, business elite, political elite, diplomatic elite. So in that sense, what we're seeing today in this week is the kind of outcome of a long-term negotiation process. So, and of course, he himself created this system because all this first president law, membership of all the councils were orchestrated by him. So I'm not really sure that we're going to see him calling the shots, because this is also the demonstration that there is a new generation, a new group of people that are ready to run Kazakhstan.
I don't know, Dr. Luka. It sounds a little bit romantic the way you are describing Kazakhstan, but I'm not here going to react into. I have other people to do this job. Torokul, what's your thinking? What role you think Nazarbayev is comfortable with going forward?
I think that for Nazarbayev, it will be very difficult to think that he will not be in decision-making process. And he will do that until the last day, as even laws are cited. I think now what we have seen in last decade, at least, the developing the cult of personality, and it is everywhere. Even let's take the latest example with the renaming Astana. But this created, at the end of the day, we see that even establishment, those people, Nazarbayev also called that now his main duty is to facilitate the rise of a new generation, in Kazakhstan. But this new generation also saw this cult of personality, and they were also shocked. But I don't know where to get that resource for the new ideas if there still be the hand of that person everywhere in politics, business, economy, in foreign policy. I think that it's a very difficult time, I think. Of course, historical changes are happening, but at the end of the day, it's very difficult to think that there might be a big changes. But we will see in coming several months, probably until the next elections, early or not early, but we will see probably there will be some games of clans or political groups or, you know, many things are now unclear.
Yeah, it's also unclear to me, Bruce. Let me get back to you. That how secure is Nazarbayev's position where he is today?
Well, I mean, he's packed the upper levels of government with his own loyalists, and the business elites are probably also. So, you know, I mean, near term, he probably is as secure as he could possibly be. He's surrounded by people that, and enough people that it would be hard for them to secretly gang up against him and all of a sudden cast him out. So I just don't see, you know, he's not going anywhere for a while, and I don't think he's under any threat for a while. You know, and of course now he's got a degree of separation. So even if there are huge economic problems, if the price of oil all of a sudden bottoms out and the country goes through another economic crisis or something, well, you know, he can always say, I'm not in charge. You know, he does still have a way out of this. He can say, it's not my policies that are doing this.
But if there were anything which could disrupt Nazarbayev's plan, what that might be?
I think there are things that could disrupt Nazarbayev's plan. I mean, I think Bruce has given a good summary of how the elites react to Nazarbayev. Mm. They're all invested in him, and I don't think they're going to disrupt anything. But I think, you know, there are the people of Kazakhstan. Mm. Now, we've seen rising, you know, discontentment for recent times. People are becoming more vocal, even though they risk a lot when they express dissent. Certainly public protest is you know, can be punishable with jail, and so can online dissent, so can expressing dissatisfaction with things on social media, and yet people are willing to risk that. And I think this is, I guess, one of the problems with such a top-down system as the one that we have in Kazakhstan, where you don't listen to the people, but you tell them what's good for them, and sometimes the people don't like that. And the people have become more vocal in Kazakhstan in recent times, and obviously, you know, with a new president, they're going to feel a bit bolder because he's not going to have the authority and power that Nazarbayev had, even though he's authoritative and powerful. Mm. So I think it is the people who may disrupt things. It is the people who may say, well, hang on, I want to say in where my country's going. It's not only about you people in former Astana, now the city of Nur-Sultan, who decide for me. And we're seeing that already. I mean, in terms of small rebellions against the renaming of Astana, for example. Mm. So I think if anybody's going to disrupt their plans, it's going to be the people.
Because I think that this decision to resign, to retire, comes with expectation from the people's side. I mean, those of us who work on Kazakhstan and who have lived on Kazakhstan know that in the last 10 years, politics have been stagnating. I mean, local scholars have been talking about this twilight zone for a decade. So there are expectations that people are going to have a say in the post-Nazarbayev direction. So this is something which I think that the elite now has to take into consideration. So I am very skeptical of the usual scenario because they know what people are saying in the country. So why not?
If I could just throw in one thing too, real fast, that we're talking internally, but we also got to remember that with the new leadership, there's be a big question of what the Russian reaction will be to the new leader if Kazakhstan starts to veer off the course that it has pursued under Nazarbayev. Russia could put a lot of pressure on a new leader in the country. So it's an extreme possibility, perhaps, but it's something that you got to take into consideration because they certainly could upset things a lot if they were afraid that Kazakhstan was moving too far away from the Kremlin.
Mm-hmm. You know, it looks like to me so far everything is being done in coordination or maybe in consultation with Russians, but there has not been any unexpected reaction from Russia, is it?
What we heard before that on the same day of resignation of Nazarbayev, Putin had telephone conversation with Nazarbayev, and after that, after one day, there was information that Putin congratulates a new president. That was it. Yeah. We didn't hear much from Russia, what might be the position of official Kremlin.
Hmm. So the changes so far has taken place. That's something. But what else we are expecting to happen, Joanna? What other appointments might be in the pipelines in days to come?
I think President Tokayev will be making some appointments to his administration and so on. Mm. And those are obviously people that we're going to have to watch closely. While Nazarbayev also is going to have his own staff and he's going to, you know, have his own people close to him. Mm-hmm. And I may be wrong, but I don't think we should expect a change of government. I'm guessing that the new government that was installed a month ago was installed precisely with this in mind, to have a new and hopefully more dynamic government in place so that that's not a worry in the early part of this interim, you know, transition period. And of course, we should be watching to see if there's any signs that they are going to call an election for whatever reason. But I suspect that that wouldn't probably happen in the immediate future, even if it happens ahead of the term. I think that what the administration, or I mean the decision makers in the capital are looking at now, is they want a period for this to bed in. They want to see how the mechanisms of power that are untested but have been put in place over these years, how are they going to work? How is Nazarbayev's constitutional role going to work? How are the plans that were in place but haven't actually been functioning for parliament and the government to have a greater say in the running of the state? How is all that going to pan out? Well, it's a bit unpredictable, even though they've planned it meticulously.
Yeah, Nazarbayev's daughter, Dariga, I cannot ignore her. She was brought in as a speaker of the parliament. Is there any reason to keep an eye on her, Dr. Luka?
it's difficult to speculate on what's going to happen from now on. I mean, I think that we all agree, because I read what the colleagues have been writing the last few days, that the termination of the role of the first family in a post-Nazarbayev scenario was one of the key elements behind the decision. Like as Bill said, he didn't want to do a Karimov all over again. So this doesn't mean, though, that Darida Nazarbayev is going to be the next president. I think that raising her up to the position where she is now actually indicates that the Nazarbayev family is there to stay. But I think we should look at it as an acid test of how this all, because in the next few months we will see the regime stress testing the decision to have Nazarbayev going. They're going to see what kind of pressure are going to be in this institutional organization after Nazarbayev has left power. Mm. So if we see that the position of Darida is stable, that indicates that they're happy with how things are going. But I personally do not believe that she's going to be the next president.
I mean, she might not be president, but this is more than coincidence that she is brought into this speaker's position while her father is stepping down as a president, right? I mean, there is some calculation behind this decision, isn't it?
Yeah, sure. Well, I mean, you know, I mean, she's been grooming her own political career for a while. Yeah. I absolutely agree. I don't see her as president at all, but I also don't see her leaving politics. Mm. Her continued presence at some position in the government is a guarantee of Nazarbayev's own legacy. So, you know, she's there really as kind of like the guard of the family fortunes and legacy at the moment. Mm. And I don't see that, you know, whatever deals have been made, part of it is that she gets a key position somewhere. Maybe she doesn't stay Speaker of the Senate or something. Mm. And like I said, I doubt she'll be president, but she's not going to just retire and start running, you know, the media business or something again like she did many, many years ago. She will have a position in the government, and it will be a prominent position, and she's going to stay for a while.
Is her position stable, Torokul, Joanna, and where she is?
Well, I mean, at the moment it is, for sure. I mean, this is obviously a promotion for her. So I think we can say that it's not only stable, but it's even on the up in a way. I mean, even though her father has just resigned as president.
Yeah.
But I suppose in any country that's been run, you know, on these kind of lines for so many years, you know, and there's always the danger that when an autocratic president stays for so long, when their family is perceived to have received various political or economic favors, there's always a danger that at some point, you know, that family can fall out of favor. I mean, we've certainly seen members of the Karimov family fall out of favor in Uzbekistan. Mm. So, you know, I mean, I guess when there is a non-transparent, non-democratic system, that is a risk. It could be way down the line. But I think what the Kazakh authorities are actually trying to do is have a really kind of civilized and smooth, if not, of course, democratic political transition. And this is the kind of thing they are desperately trying to avoid. And I think that many of the elites would be on side with the Nazarbayev and his family and wanting to avoid that. They want to show the whole region, not just Central Asia, but the post-Soviet region too, a different model. I think that's the part of the plan.
In the past, we were also talking about another family member, close family member, son-in-law, Kulebayev.
Timur Kulebayev.
So, what he's doing, and is there any movement around him, Torokul?
I don't think he will come to political arena.
Okay.
I don't believe because he is in a business and oil sector, and he's doing, according to Forbes, also he's wells together with a daughter of the president and his wife Dinara Kulebayeva now is really jumping up. And secondly, about Darida Nazarbayeva, I think Bruce is right that her presence gives a guarantee for Nazarbayev himself and Darida and the family from kind of, and it's kind of a defense from attacks also. But I think in near future, what will be interesting for me, for example, just to see how Kasym-Jomart Tokayev will behave, let's say, in near future, because in politics sometimes there might be some unexpected changes. What we have seen before with Shavkat Mirziyoyev and with Gurbanguly Berdimuhamedov.
Gene Mekov. Talk about Gene Mekov. Kyrgyzstan scenario comes to my mind whenever I think about Kazakhstan.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, that is why we it's very, very difficult to predict something right now. But still, I think for me, it will be interesting to see how Qasym-Jomart Tokayev will work, serve in his interim president position.
Mm. Well, yeah, there are lots of other things that we can talk about, and it's kind of we are getting into a prediction business here, which is very difficult when you talk about Central Asia. But still, I want to take your points before we end the discussion on some of the future-looking stuff. So, Dr. Luka, what are the, let's say, five things you will be looking at to determine where things might end up going forward in Kazakhstan?
The first one is how the new regime considers the opportunity for economic diversification. How are they going to be talking seriously about reducing the impact of energy on the business? The second one would be the relationship with Russia along the internal, external dimension, like, you know, the Russian population of Kazakhstan and how they relate with the policies that the government has in relation to the Kremlin. The third one, of course, will have to be the establishment of a national dialogue about political pluralism. So the last one is the most important one, because I have been speaking with ordinary Kazakhs in the last few years, and they all told me, why do we have to accept a designated successor, and are we not entitled to choose who's going to rule the country? This is something which I think is important, and there are certain limits to which this regime for sure will not go, but I don't think they can leave the bar so low. There will have to be some kind of national discussion about how the politics of the place is organized in post-Nazarbayev Kazakhstan. Because there is also one thing which we have to agree on, is that second-generation leaders in Central Asia tend to have less legitimacy and less clout than the first president, because they're not the first.
Yeah.
So whoever comes after Nazarbayev, being Tokayev or whoever comes after Tokayev, is going to be doing some more of a hard yards to get back into the people's nation. So these are the three things that are important, but the most important one is liberalization.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you, Dr. Luka. So I will also be looking at days leading into the election or the election day, how things might develop. Okay, the same thing to you, Joanna. So what are the couple of elements that you will be looking at to determine where things are headed going forward in Kazakhstan?
I think I'm going to be looking at the behavior, basically, or what we can at least interpret from it, from what we see, of both Nazarbayev and Tokayev. I think it's important to see, you know, how they're going to interact together, and whether Nazarbayev, despite his old decision to give up power, he's bound to feel a little jealous. I mean, after 30 years in one job, pretty much, he's bound to feel a little bit jealous of his fiefdom. And so I'm going to be looking for any signs of a power struggle, which one wouldn't certainly expect in the immediate future, but it would be interesting to see if any small signs of tension were to arise. So I think, that's where my focus is going to be. And also, I'm going to be, you know, keep talking to the people on the street and see how they feel, and watching how people are chattering on social media, because the public mood is, I think, as Luka pointed out, people are going to want more of a stake, and they're going to feel more entitled to ask for it or even demand it under a second president who is, you know, has less clout, let's say, than the first.
Yeah. Okay. Let's see. Turukul, what will you be looking at?
In last couple of years, what we have witnessed, there were suppression or arrests, detentions of even ordinary small assemblies.
Yeah.
Protest meetings are really developed.
Mm.
People sometimes, even they are being arrested in front of their houses, not at the square or during the protest, but before going out from the houses. Internet is being blocked quite often, almost every day, and we know certain times, you know, with no free media actually in the country overall, in regions especially. There are so many of these kind of things, and especially what human rights defenders always are telling about the prisoners because of political reasons. What will happen to these all freedom and democracy issues? That will be very interesting to see. Will there be any changes from Tokayev's side until the next elections, and if he will survive after that? That will be very interesting to see. And the second thing is, what will be the kind of a attitude or reaction policy from main players in geopolitics, Russia, USA, and China.
Yeah, actually, that was a really good point, Torkel. Like in recent months, there have been number of issues which become a rallying point in Kazakhstan, be it like a land reform, be it the situation in Xinjiang, or maybe mothers' protest, oil workers in Zhanaozen. It looked like to me that Kazakhs are trying to find a reason to protest. I mean, how those protesters are going to react to, let's say, to Tokayev's administration, how different and liberated they would feel the way they do their protests, the way they get organized, how the authorities are going to react. That's also going to be one element that we should be looking at. And one other thing is, it looks like whatever happens, Kazakhstan is going to steal the world attention from Uzbekistan for a while. Let's see where they go with it. Bruce, what do you think, where they are headed?
Two points that I would make about looking forward. One, obviously, I'm fascinated with the succession process in Central Asia. I do not think that Tokayev is the long-term pick for this. So I'm going to be curious to watch who steps out of the shadows and the campaign to legitimize that this person's image to the people of Kazakhstan. So said someone in the coming weeks and months, we're going to see people that we haven't seen a lot of before that will show up, and we'll hear all the virtues that they have and the qualities that they have that would make them ideal for a leadership role in the government. So that's, I'm looking for that person to try to find out who that's going to be. The point you made about Uzbekistan and Kazakhstan, see, this is one where I slightly disagree with this a little bit. I want to see what Uzbekistan's posturing is going to be toward Kazakhstan in the near future. I had always suspected that Mirziyoyev had figured that Nazarbayev would retire, or certainly would die or something soon, and this would put Uzbekistan in a new position in Central Asia, certainly present them with new opportunities. You can't confront the Aksakal with 30 years of experience, but a newcomer is somebody different, and Uzbekistan is the biggest country in terms of population and borders all the other countries. So I would look for Uzbekistan to step up its game a little bit and fulfill a bigger role regionally in Central Asia.
Joanna, do you see Kazakhstan stepping up a little bit further to catch up with Uzbekistan, the type of attention that they are getting? Kazakhstan certainly likes to be at the center of attention. You know, we have seen that from Nazarbayev's ambitions.
Absolutely. I mean, it certainly does like to be in the international limelight, as long as it's for the right reasons, of course. I actually think that if Uzbekistan and Kazakhstan start to vie, which they may well do, and already have been doing, for positive kind of coverage, that could have a beneficial effect on their behavior at home, you know? I think that Kazakhstan must have been watching how much Uzbekistan has been praised in the international media, sometimes to incredible extents for a country that still has no opposition and has had no free elections and no prospect of any. But I do think that because of watching that praise, it may encourage Kazakhstan to think, well, if I liberalize a little bit, you know, Tokayev may think, if I liberalize a little bit, could that help us garner some positive praise? So maybe the two of them vying for positive praise may actually have some beneficial effects for their people at home. Let's hope so.
Very positive note. Thank you very much, Joanna Lillis, Eurasianet's Chief Central Asia Correspondent. And also big thanks goes to Dr. Lukan Cizci, Lecturer of Central Asian Studies at the University of Glasgow, Bruce Panier, editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Central Asia blog, Kishlok Owozi, and Torkel Durov, director of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Kazakh service. Thank you, colleagues, for your time today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And this is it from me, Mohammed Tahir, Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's media manager for South and Central Asia in Washington, D.C. Until next week. Bye-bye.